Welcome to Money, Markets and Mastermind, a Citywire South Africa podcast that delves into the intricate world of finance, investment and strategic decision-making. If you're a fund selector or an independent financial advisor or an institutional capitalist looking for insights, analysis and expert opinions to enhance your perspective, you're in the right place here with me, editor Ruan Uester. Today marks a first on two levels. It's the first time that we're broadcasting from our studios in Vauxhall, London, and it's on the second front. It's the first time that we're trying this video format. In this special episode, we're diving into global equities in uncertain times. And my guest is Joseph Stevens. He's a senior analyst on the global equities team at Guinness Global Investors. And he works closely on both the global equity income and global innovative strategies. Guinness just launched a feeder fund that is based or mirrors its flagship $8.2 billion equity income fund. Joseph, welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us in person here in London.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Let's start with a macro picture. In a recent presentation at our Fan Court retreat in South Africa, your colleagues highlighted growing tariffs, a dip in US consumer sentiment, and volatility across key economic indicators. How would you sum up the biggest risk faced by equity investors at the moment?
Mm-hmm. So I think clearly the biggest risk for equity investors is the ongoing uncertainty coming out of the Trump administration, and particularly how it relates to tariffs. But not only the kind of first order monetary impact on businesses importing goods and services, but it's the secondary and third order impacts we're constantly looking to monitor and how that is evolving. And by that I mean how these tariffs and uncertainties are impacting GDP forecasts, consumer confidence, but also how it relates to the US Fed and its trajectory for US interest rates. I think certainly we've seen the US consumer become weaker. I don't think we'd categorize it as weak today. But certainly the kind of ongoing uncertainty is having a detrimental impact on businesses and consumer alike.
Of course, we're talking about global equities and uncertain times. From a Guinness perspective, is this uncertainty something to fear or an opportunity that we can grab?
I think there's, you know, seemingly no place is immune thus far. The tariffs have been more aggressive and more widespread than the market had expected, certainly when you compare it to Trump's first term in office. And there are still lots of question marks over trade negotiations and trade deals to be potentially negotiated and signed, industry-specific tariffs and disruptions, maybe the pharmaceutical industry, maybe the semiconductor industry. And I think we continue to do what we've always done, and that is focus on high return on capital businesses, those with strong balance sheets, and those effectively with competitive moats that have weathered economic uncertainty before, as we believe they are more likely to weather the next bout of uncertainty that we see today. I think from an opportunity perspective, there's certainly been some weakness in stocks related to AI and data centers post the DeepSeek announcement earlier on in the year, but also stocks most exposed to tariffs. And certainly that's creating some opportunities, and there are some interesting opportunities for us. I think today we are happy with how both portfolios are aligned and balanced. So it's more looking for opportunities at the margin for us.
You've got a very focused philosophy at Guinness. You're looking for high-earning, top-quality companies that will sustain growth. But how do you define quality in today's environment, post-COVID, and during this time of tariff tantrums?
Yeah, so across Guinness, and particularly on the global team where I sit, we have one overarching philosophy, and that is that we believe companies that can maintain high return on capital profiles are more likely to outperform in the long run. And that translates into our two kind of flagship products you mentioned, the Global Equity Income Fund and the Global Innovators Fund. And importantly, you know, we define quality in the same way we've always done, and that is persistently high return on capital and strong balance sheets. That hasn't changed, particularly over COVID. And actually, we find that high quality businesses tend to remain high quality. So we're looking for companies that have weathered that economic uncertainty in the past 5-10 years, because we believe they're more likely to weather this uncertainty and whatever comes through the door over the next 5-10 years in the future.
I'm going to talk more about US President Donald Trump's tantrums and the tariffs associated with them. In the presentation that I referred to earlier showed a wave of new charges across Asia, whether it's from Cambodia to Vietnam. What do you think are some of the second or third order effects that global investors may be underestimating?
Yeah, so clearly the immediate risk is the monetary cost we mentioned to businesses importing goods and services. But the second and third order impacts could be potentially more detrimental. And by that, I mean potential impacts on CPI numbers, which we're yet to see, slowing economic growth. We've seen markets reduce their expectation for GDP growth across regions for the coming years. In the US, the market now expects maybe 1.5% over the next couple of years, as opposed to 2% they forecast at the beginning of the year. But also, you know, lower investment costs from businesses, potentially. You know, if you're a business looking to spend X billion dollars on a new manufacturing plant, for example, you know, you're more likely to hold out and wait to see how this tariff situation washes out before investing those huge sums of money.
You focus on two distinct strategies, that's dividend income and quality innovation. How are these two funds responding differently to the current environment?
So again, across both portfolios, we're focused on quality businesses. So on the Global Equity Income Fund, we're focused on companies that are good allocators of capital and that can grow their dividend alongside their broader capital base. That portfolio tends to have a beta of around 0.85, so that tends to be more defensive. The Global Innovators Fund is looking for quality growth portfolios. So we're not looking for deep value or speculative growth across either portfolio, but good, steady compounders of growth. And thus far, we've seen the portfolios perform in the way we would expect. So year to date, both portfolios are ahead of the index, the MSCI World. Global Equity Income, which is more defensive, outperformed the MSCI World in that initial drawdown we saw from February to April by about 7%. So it kind of did what it said on the tin. Whereas Innovators tends to underperform when markets are weak, but avoids much of that speculative growth weakness, which drags down the majority of the market. So although we underperformed a little bit in the drawdown, we've actually seen the fund outperform when the markets have subsequently rallied. So both funds are ahead year to date, and both performing in line with how we would expect.
Joseph, your analysis pointed to strong performance in utilities, industrials and financials. Do you expect the leadership to continue, or are we nearing a turning point?
I think it's, you know, our crystal ball is as murky as the next person's or the next investor's. I think there's, again, lots of question marks remain. Liberation Day tariffs being reintroduced, potentially. Trade deals yet to be signed, you know, one between the US and UK. But is that a kind of benchmark for everyone else? But also the US Fed and the interest rate path. You know, despite what Donald Trump would like Jerome Powell to do, there's still a lot of uncertainty into what direction that goes and how fast and how quick interest rates are cut. And within that, for what reason interest rates potentially are cut? Is it because the US is in a strong position, inflation is coming down, and the Fed feels they can reduce the economic burden on consumers by cutting rates? Or is it because the economy, the US economy, is in a weaker position, GDP growth is kind of falling and unemployment is rising, and actually they need to add that stimulus into the economy? So that's a very important question. Again, we're focused on the best 30 or 35 ideas across both strategies, focusing on companies with competitive moats and strong balance sheets, which should better weather economic uncertainty and aren't overly reliant on debt loads to fuel growth or to pay an unsustainable dividend. And we think that is a better position to be versus a lot of our peers.
Let's dig into dividends. Your research shows that dividend growers kind of outperform in volatile times. But how do you distinguish between sustainable dividend growth from companies just trying to appease their shareholders?
Yeah, so I guess unlike traditional income products, which tend to start their process by screening for yield, looking for the highest yielding names in their investable universe, which tends to lead you down more economically sensitive areas like banks and utilities, materials, real estate. We think a better starting point for an income product is by actually looking at the quality of the underlying businesses. So we start by looking at the return on capital and the balance sheet strength of businesses, as we believe those companies which have the high return on capital and strong balance sheets are one, more likely to pay a dividend, but two, more likely to grow that dividend as they reinvest in the business. So really that dividend growth is a consequence of good capital allocation and reinvesting back in the business. And actually, you know, for all the negatives, COVID was a good case study for dividend strategies. In the year of 2020, when 50% of UK and European businesses were cutting or cancelling their dividends, within the portfolio, the 35 names we held in 2020, we didn't see any cancellations for the dividends. We saw only one company holding cut its dividend, and we saw 80% of the portfolio continue to grow their dividend throughout. So that's a really good example of why we believe focusing on the quality of the businesses as opposed to screening the yield is a much better way of managing an income product.
Were there any dividend surprises since then, good or bad, that you can share with us?
Predominantly, yes, on the positive side. Again, we've seen no cancellations within the portfolio over time. And if you look year to date, 2025, we've seen 27 of the 35 stocks we hold announce their dividend actions for the year. Of those 27, 26 have announced dividend increases with an average dividend growth of around 6.7%. We've seen one company hold their dividend flat. And again, we've seen no cancellations or cuts in 2025.
I found your drawdown charts quite fascinating in the presentation at our Fancourt retreat. The equity income fund has consistently outperformed the benchmark in periods of stress. What's driving this resilience? Is it structure, philosophy, or just sticking to your process?
I think it's a bit of all of the above. You know, the focus of the process is finding good quality companies that have weathered economic uncertainty in the past. They've exhibited persistently high return on capital despite that economic uncertainty they faced. Subsequently, we think we can be more confident that these businesses are more likely to weather the next bouts of economic uncertainty. So what we find is that although it's a backwards-looking measure by looking at the return on capital over the last 5-10 years, it's a very powerful leading indicator for a company's ability to continue generating that higher return on capital. So, i.e., good quality companies tend to remain good quality companies. And that has been the consistent approach since launching the products 15 to 20 years ago across equity income and innovators. So that consistency in the approach, sticking to what we know, and also, which we haven't really touched upon yet, is an equally weighted portfolio. So we run both our strategies in an equally weighted manner. And in that sense, you can be sure that the good performance we've exhibited over that 15, 20-year period is driven by all 30, 35 names as opposed to a few larger bets on a few stocks that may not be as repeatable over time.
35 companies is still quite a high concentrated portfolio. How do you balance high conviction with diversification?
Yeah, so across Guinness and within the team, we tend to have 30 to 40 names within the strategies. We think that's a good way of balancing stock-specific risk and diversification benefits. And again, we manage these funds in an equally weighted manner. And that's quite unique to Guinness, very different to peers. And we believe there are certain benefits that come from an equally weighted approach. One is that you'll never see us with a long tail of small positions. We'll never have 0.5% in a stock which isn't adding to fund performance but is taking up a disproportionate amount of fund manager or analyst time to keep on top of. But it also means we have a very strong sell discipline. We're constantly inwards looking. What are our best performing stocks? What are our kind of underperforming names? And assessing, do we want to be putting more money to work in those underperforming names? And should we be, you know, taking some profit off the top from those outperforming names? And actually, you know, this is a one-in-one-out portfolio across both strategies. So if we want to buy a new or initiate a new position, it must be a better opportunity than the current holding.
We're ending up the first month of the second half of 2025. What's top of mind for your team? And are you leaning into any contrarian views or regions?
I would say we are continuing to do what we have always done. Again, we've been running these strategies for over 15 years. Global Equity Income was launched at the end of 2010. So Matthew Page and Ian Mortimer have been running that strategy for coming up to 15 years. Global Innovators has been running since 2003, so over 20 years now. And within that time, we've had a consistent approach, and that has kind of stood the test of time. So I think in terms of monitoring new ideas or leaning into you know, contrarian views. It's more at the margins. Where are the new opportunities? Is this stock better than an existing holding? We don't tend to, well, we haven't kind of drifted in terms of our style over time. We are focused on quality companies as our kind of primary focus. And then it's at the margins where we're looking to decide, is that a better opportunity than one of our best, than one of our current, 30 or 35 names.
Joseph, as a last question, if there's any piece of advice you could give to a fund selector to calm his or her nerves during these uncertain times, what would that be?
Yeah, so I guess, as is mentioned, we've been running these strategies for 15, 20 years, right? And Matthew Page and Ian Mortimer, who head up the team and manage these portfolios, have seen various drawdowns and bouts of uncertainty over that period. If it's the European crisis, if it's taper tantrums, or if it's Ukraine, Russia, COVID, and more recent, you know, Trump and tariffs. And I think the kind of process we have in place has stood the test of time. And I think focusing on companies that have proven track records of exhibiting that high return on capital over difficult periods gives us that confidence that going forward, they can continue to do so. Having said that, we think, you know, having that balanced approach, not being overly indexed to deep value or speculative growth, means you're focused on quality companies that can protect on the downside, but actually maximize upside capture when markets are strong.
Well, that wraps up our episode, or this episode, of Money, Markets and Masterminds with Citywire South Africa and me, the editor, Ruan Yusuf. Thank you, Joseph, for talking us through how you manage global equities in these uncertain times. For our listeners, or our viewers in this case, please go have a look at their feeder fund just launched, which is based on their global equity income fund. To all our Citywire South African listeners or viewers, as I just said, thank you very much for tuning in, and thank you very much to my producer, as always, Vero Loba da Silva. If you enjoyed this episode, please take some time to leave a review, share it with your network, and be sure to check in next time for our follow-up episode. All our Citywire podcast and vodcast are available on all major platforms, including iono.fm, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. And with that, and until next time, goodbye.